This tape now on the evening of the 27th of May for 8 p.m. at Laurel to record Art Hollowell, the National Director of the Association to Preserve Our Right to Keep and Bear Arms, and also to record the showing of the film Firearms and Freedom in the hall in Laurel, Montana, the 27th of May, 1970.
Well, I guess we might as well get a show on the road, as we wish to apologize to the start due to circumstances beyond our control. In behalf of the Association to Preserve Our Right to Keep and Bear Arms, I welcome you here. I am Wayne Kim from Billings. I will attempt to be your MC for tonight. I really didn't plan on this when I came here, but we'll do the best we can. Will everybody please rise now for the pledge to the flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. The purpose of the association is to support and defend the constitutional principle that all government, all government levels in the United States, and especially the Second Amendment of the Constitution, and to maintain and strengthen the belief in Almighty God and in our national heritage. We are in opposition to any federal, state, or local firearms control legislation. The law is not in keeping with the Constitution of the United States. Mr. Hollowell is one of the original founders and the first president of the National Association, which was founded in the fall of 1966 in Medford, Oregon. As a result of President Lyndon B. Johnson's urgent call for gun registration after the Texas University massacre. In the short period of a little over 3 years, the association now has members in all but four states. National headquarters are located at 1510 North Riverside in Medford, Oregon. Mr. Hollowell was born in Billings and raised in Joliet. He is a veteran of the Korean War and a graduate of the University of Montana. Prior to his work with the association, Mr. Hollowell spent 10 years as a forester with the Bureau of Land Management in the states of Idaho, Nevada, Utah, and Oregon. Mr. Hollowell is involved in this work because of his belief and dedication to constitutional principles and a republican form of government. Because of his belief that the Constitution of the United States today hangs by a thread. That thread is the Second Amendment, the right of the people to keep and bear arms. At this time, I'd like to introduce Mr. Hollowell. Thank you, Nate. Good evening, Americans. I'd like to say, find a lot of faces I know in the audience, former friends, associates, also quite a few of my relatives here tonight. I'm grateful for the opportunity to be here in this year tonight. I'm grateful for your concern, but I don't believe you know here. Maybe some of you are here wondering what the son of James C. Hollowell would have to say. But I'm also grateful for those who made this meeting possible. So that you don't have to hear too much of what I have to say tonight. I brought this film with me. It'll save me a lot of work. It's entitled Firearms and Freedom. And it was produced in 1968. But the message it has is just as vital today as it was 2 years ago. There's only a couple of changes. Where it seems that we are being barraged by the news media with a lot of anti-gun propaganda, or tremendous barrage, we are not today as we were in 68, or well, probably well aware of. not become law. They should have finished the sentence and said it probably would not become law this year, maybe in 1968, because the same bill has been reintroduced in the 91st Congress and it's been passed through the subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee and is waiting for the opportune time to be passed in the Senate. So with that, being that we're a half hour late here, I'm going to start the film. I should probably make sure that the curtain is closed, but maybe with the lights off, it will be dark enough in here without any problems. Say, Wayne, would you mind run that projector? You probably wanted to run one of those before, and I'll get this tape recorder adjusted to the correct sound because we just kept it. One of the reasons we didn't start sooner is because we didn't get the door open until 5 minutes late. Then I went off to the hell of it last night. Somebody was real helpful. Just put all my cords away in that tape recorder up there, except the one that plugs it into the electricity. So I'm sure thankful for the gentleman that went and got here. Somebody switch those lights off, please.
By the roof.
They can't.
corresponding increase in the number of crimes involving guns. But by implication, the finger of responsibility is pointed at the law-abiding citizen who hunts and keeps firearms for that purpose. The law-abiding citizen who collects guns for their historic, aesthetic, or intrinsic value. And the law-abiding citizen who has firearms for the protection of his home and his loved ones. The villain seems to have become anyone who has a gun, rather than the criminal and irrational people who misuse guns. The caption above this cartoon might be rather amusing, but for the fact that it has a ring of familiarity. The thief was probably simply the victim of a heartless society. But the homeowner, he should have known that in our modern society, no one needs a gun. In his newsletter of June 17, 1968, California State Senator John G. Schmitz expressed the same concern felt by many knowledgeable Americans over the emotion-inspired demand to take away the guns. Senator Schmitz pointed out,
it is argued that the government of law-abiding Americans through restrictive gun laws would greatly reduce the frequency of violent crime, though in fact, it would put our good citizens at the mercy of criminals.
Violence strikes and flourishes where it meets no opposition, and is most effectively prevented and curbed when met head-on. Vast portions of San Francisco lay in ruins after the disastrous earthquake and fire of 1906. The city was under martial law, and orders were issued that looters were to be shot on sight. No one thought this was unusual, and there was remarkably little looting. When looting, burning, and rioting erupted in Washington, D.C. during April 1968, police were ordered by their politician superiors not to interfere, and the violence raged on for several days. Halfway across the nation in Chicago, arsonists and rioters set the torch to large portions of the city. When the mayor suggested that police be permitted to shoot arsonists and looters if necessary to stop the Holocaust, the wailing and weeping of the bleeding hearts over such inhumanity was heard across the land. The bleeding heart shed no tears for the victims, those who may have been burned to death in the fire set by the arsonists, or the small merchants who lost everything to the looters. The cry was, no matter what suffering they inflict, no harm must come to the criminals. This attitude makes it nice and cozy for the criminals, but just a little hard on the honest citizens who are the victims. This same attitude is apparent in many recent court actions and decisions. It appears that the criminal is to be treated as tenderly as possible, as if he's become a natural resource to be protected in every way possible. This leaves the responsible citizen to feel more and more that the defense of his family and his home has come to depend upon his own abilities and means. Unfortunately, with increasing regularity, honest citizens are having to provide such defense. The Pike County Democrat Times tells of the gallant actions of Mrs. Frank Rockhoff, who with her four daughters returned home one evening to be met inside by a shotgun-armed intruder. The intruder forced the family upstairs and tied Mrs. Rodhouse to a chair in a separate room. Mrs. Rodhouse was able to slip her bonds after he left the room. She then went to the chest of drawers and got a pistol and some cartridges. She then slipped quietly downstairs where her son was tied up, and he showed her how to load and fire the pistol. She went back upstairs, and in one of the bedrooms, she found the intruder now naked and about to attack her 13-year-old daughter. She called to him to stop, but the criminal grasped his shotgun and turned toward Mrs. Ross. She fired three shots, and the man fell to the floor, mortally wounded. This woman saved herself and her family because she was prepared and able to do so. This is but one of the countless numbers of similar incidents. If all the demands of the anti-gun fanatics become realities, self-protection by the citizen would become an impossibility. For when registration and licensing prove ineffective in curbing the rising tide of violence, surely they will demand confiscation next. In their juggling of figures and statistics, the anti-gun fanatics show themselves to be either lacking in knowledge on the subject of gun fatalities or very deep. One of their most used claims is that in 1966 alone, 19,500 Americans were killed by guns. Let us look at this shocking total of 19,500 in more detail and see just how it is reached. 19,500 victims of guns in 1966. 6,500 were homicides. This is 33% of the firearm fatalities, and all people of good conscience are concerned about how this terrible toll can be reduced. More vigorous application of existing laws against those who misuse guns could reduce this figure. The barrage of propaganda coming from the anti-gun zealots condemns the obvious potential dangers to the defenseless family are shown little concern by public officials and bleeding hearts who prattle on about disarming the criminal. Completely ignored is the warning of FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover. He pointed out in a newsletter to all law enforcement agencies that hoodlums and criminals will obtain guns regardless of gun control. But the anti-gun fanatics seem immune to this sort of common sense reason. By their twisted logic, whenever there is a crime involving a gun, it is not the person being
know what sails in it than in any other Congress ever assembled in the United States. And you can recall, Senator Dodd said, all I want to do is curb the mail order sale of firearms. He hollered that for 2.5 years. And that's all you heard. Most people said, well, I guess that's all right. We don't want these 14 and 16-year-olds ordering handguns through the mail and killing everybody. But really, did you see any statistics where they were killing anybody? But a lot of people believed the news media that that was what was causing all the crime. But Dodd really wasn't sincere in this. Dodd now has a bill in to outlaw all handguns. What are you going to have next? I imagine he's already got the one to outlaw rifles and shotguns already written up waiting for it. Next year, there'll be a question and answer period at the conclusion of what I have to say here. So if you'll save your questions till then, I appreciate it. Well, these are indeed very strange times that we live in. Because we are constantly bombarded by new emotional appeals for legislation that will cure every ill that is affecting our great nation, they promise, or earnestly promise. Well, to exercise cool judgment and strong opposing action in the face of these emotional appeals is a vigilance that will preserve liberty in America today. America has a political heritage. It is the heritage of limited constitutional government. Our founding fathers, or the American colonists, had learned by sad experience and history's great lessons that the agent for the protection of God-given rights, government, can become the worst enemy of those rights. See, our constitutional form of government was chiefly distinguished from the European form by the limitations placed upon it. That's why our forefathers came here. My grandmother came here from Norway for that type of freedom. But other people came here for that type of freedom. You see, in Europe, as the film brought out, the chains of restriction were on the people. Our founding fathers lifted the chains of restriction and placed upon the government. It's just that day, them chains have slipped back. To a great extent, they're back on the people. And now, it's like King George, when the Revolutionary War started, it was because the Red Coats tried to confiscate their firearms. That's when the Revolutionary War actually started, when they marched to confiscate their firearms to the stores. And that's what will happen again if we allow it to get that far. We really don't want to let it get that far. Personally, I don't, anyway. We can destroy the birthright that we have built for our children to do. George Washington likened government to fire. He said, I quote, government is not reason, it is not eloquence, it is force. Like fire, it is a dangerous servant and a fearful master. Well, nearly 200 years have passed since the Supreme Court made the supreme, excuse me, the Constitution was made the supreme law of the land, and George Washington was inaugurated our first president. But the essential conflict, the rights of the individual versus the power of the state, have not changed. How much more you can see it today than our fathers, your fathers, or our grandparents could see. This essential conflict is very evident today. Very evident. Well, necessity has always been the call for expanding governmental power at the expense of the rights of the individual. And security has always been that necessity most referred to. You can see it every day you watch TV. It's the same old picture, or the same old people on TV, in Congress anyway, and a lot of the same faces. They're always calling for more legislation to curb this or to curb that. There's a necessity here and a necessity there, population explosion, or if the pollution problem, before that it was defense against the atom bomb and civil defense. And that all went by the wayside and stole these other two political footballs. But that's all the TV can talk about. It's the same old faces from Congress that are on there. Those who do not want to saddle you with more control never get an opportunity to say anything. You're just notice how few those who 1958, Frank S. Myers, writing in the National Review, said this: "The gun control legislation were enacted on many levels in the United States. It would be the insurrectionists, the rioters, and the criminals who would find illegal means of procuring weapons. It would be the solid citizens who would be disarmed." Now, I'd like to ask you a question. In reference to the film, brought it out very well in regard to the three assassins. Can they kill an inalienable right, a constitutionally guaranteed right? It looks like they are made a fair job of it to a certain extent. They certainly have infringed on our constitutionally guaranteed right. And those of you who are under 18 in the audience, you can't buy a firearm or ammunition. In other words, you're second class citizens as far as the Second Amendment of the Constitution is concerned. And this, to me, means that they are trying to discourage the youth of our nation from purchasing or using firearms. They can't go buy a box of 22 shells. In other words, they have to go ask their father and mother to go down and help them buy them, be with them. And they haven't got time. They're very busy nowadays, you know. And they said, wait a while. Pretty soon they're discouraged. Yep, they can draft them in the army, send them over to Vietnam, and they want to give them a rifle right away. And yet, all this time, they don't want them to have any up until they're 18, and then up until 21, until they get a handgun. So, to a certain extent, these three assassins, criminals, communists, and an alien have killed an inalienable right, a constitutionally guaranteed right. Now, some of you might say, well, it's also civil rights. That is not so. Many gun owners and sportsmen I talk to come up to me and tell me they're violating my civil rights with all this legislation. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. When it's like I say I have a glass of dry water here. That's how totally false the term civil rights is. If anyone would stop and examine it, you would see for yourself that this term civil rights is a total fraud. Because look up civil in the dictionary and you find it pertains to government. How many here in the room agree that government gave you your right to keep their own? Or did United States. This is all they wanted. Rattle about curbing crime is nothing but to deceive the American people. Well, then the bill went back to the House, and the House agreed, and then it became, that was in October. So, either the emotion really carried over from May 23rd clear down to October, or the news media was just feeding you again, because I don't believe you got emotional about it. Those of you who wrote letters realize the press, and this is the best means you knew of at hand to do, was to write a letter and send a telegram. And millions of gun owners and concerned Americans did this. And that was the reason that more than half the senators didn't go for this tidy convention. Good thing they didn't. But we did get saddled with dictatorial gun control law and violations of the Second Amendment. It makes it illegal for anybody to buy firearms through the mail, other than you have the license from the federal government. It makes it illegal for law-abiding citizens to purchase any type of new or used firearm without first giving your name, age, and address, height, weight, place of birth, what race you are, and then you have to sign certifying you're not breaking the provisions of that. It makes it illegal for anyone under 18 to purchase any type of rifle or ammunition, any type of firearm or ammunition. It makes it illegal for anyone under 21 to purchase any type of handgun ammunition. And it makes it illegal for you to purchase any type of ammunition without first giving your name, age, and address, except as of November last fall, they removed the restrictions on rifle and shotgun ammunition. Just a lot of pressure. But they left it on for 22 ammunition. And guess who was responsible for that? Your distinguished senator from Montana. Right there was on the headlines of Gun Week of October 17th. Mansfield ordered removal of 22 rimfire from the bill. Matter of record, I bet the news media here didn't tell you that, though. So you still, every time you go down to the gun store or any store that sells ammunition, for every skinny little box of 22 shells, you have to give your name, age, and address. Next time you see Mike, ask him how this is serving a crime, will you? Then let me know. I'm interested. I'd like to know why he thinks that's very strange. We've been circulating petitions as the one that went around the room here in all 50 states since 1969, January 1969. And we feel to a great extent as a result of this, there are now 15 bills in Congress to repeal the Gun Control Act of 1968, just in record. To repeal it entirely. The sad thing about it is, though, there are only two representatives from the Western states that have saw fit to introduce legislation like that. Representative McClure, the second representative who so introduced such legislation, and Representative McClure of Idaho, Representative Burton from Utah. Why hasn't Representative Olson introduced legislation? Or are Montana people from the Western District satisfied information could best be used if there was ever a move to take away the people's firearms. This type of list we do not need. Unquote. And this, ladies and gentlemen, is the crux of the whole matter. This list that is being gathered throughout the United States by the 140,000 gun dealers is being put on a central list in Washington, D.C. of all firearm owners in the United States. And this comes from no better authority than Harlan B. Carter, past president of the National Rifleman Association, and now still a director of the National Rifleman Association. He made this statement in January 1969 before the National Wildlife Federation in a meeting in Arizona. And he said, I'll read it to you, already the central government in Washington under the Gun Control Act of 1968 has authority to establish and maintain centralized and computerized records keeping of the name, address, description, social security number, or driver's license, whichever it might be, and related information for any event, any individual in this room who purchases a teeny little box of 22 ammunition. Now, all gun dealers just recently received this. This is a bulletin put out by the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Division of the IRS, Internal Revenue Service, that is. That's what IRS is. This is the March 23rd bulletin. In regard to this list, it has a question and answer section in here, and the question, one of the questions is, what do I do about my federal firearms license and records when there is an absolute discontinuance of business with no succession? The answer is, when there is an absolute discontinuance of business, the licensee shall notify the Assistant Regional Commissioner within 30 days of the discontinuance of business and shall forward all his firearms and ammunition records to him. Right there in the official publication where this information goes. And in audiences that I've had in Utah and other areas, gun dealers have stood up and said that the ATF agents have been there and picked up their records and not brought them back for 3 months. Recorded. Anyway, if they're going to trade the firearms, why would they want to go through all 140,000 gun dealers in the United States who can sell firearms and can record this information? They're looking for firearms. Isn't it rather slow? Time waster? The economics of it is pitiful to think of. And they realize this too. If they don't want to let you know that they're keeping you on the list. Before I pass on, though, I want to point out something here. The number of them is bad. Of the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Division is 666. Anybody recognize that number? That's the Marshall's East, isn't it? You ask for that IRS agent, you see, he can tell you what it is. The one we asked didn't know. You find it in chapter 13, verse 18, book of Revelation, pertaining to the latter days. Quite interesting, isn't it? Could be just a coincidence, but it is interesting. Now, the National Violence Commission, as you probably noticed that we referred to that on the handbill, came out recommending the confiscation of all civilian handguns in the United States. Only police officers, security guards, and small businessmen in high crime areas were going to be allowed to keep a firearm. Old Dwight Eisenhower was going to be very generous with you, though, which that is with your tax dollars to the general fund. For every one of you who own a handgun here, you're going to give you $20 to get across the board. Well, isn't that nice? I bet you appreciate $20 for each one of your handguns when they confiscate it. Well, he's hoping that you give them up willingly. It won't cost him. Maybe he'd like to just take them without paying for it, without paying for it. Because if you take 20 times, 21 million, estimated number of million-owned firearms, this is a lot of losses. But then taxpayers have been standing still for quite a while. And I guess they'll stand still for a little longer, maybe, until they get their handguns. Now, did you hear the news media say the man's a radical and extremist? Or even thinking? Or coming up with such a recommendation? Did anyone here in the room ever hear the news media it didn't fall on deaf ears. In fact, in the month of August, just after he came out with the recommendation last year, a lot of journalists in the big papers were writing in regards to this was the best thing you could do. Like, Eisenhower said 65% of the crime was committed with a handgun. That's what it says right in here. This is a photostatic copy of the official documents that he put out on the firearms task force. Well, you're right. It didn't fall on deaf ears. Senator Dodd picked it up right away. He's introduced legislation that you would know Dodd would do this. But there's a new unfamiliar man in the House that did the same thing. Representative Zipka. His bill, and this is it, H.R. 16250. And I'd like to read to you the opening paragraph here under the bill. This was introduced, by the way, on March 3rd, 1972. A bill to prohibit the importation, manufacture, sale, purchase, transfer, receipt, or transportation of handguns in any manner affecting interstate transit, interstate or foreign commerce, except for or by members of the Air Force, law enforcement officials, and as authorized by the Secretary of Treasury. Well, that just about includes everything, doesn't it? You can't manufacture it, you can't sell it, you can't purchase them, you can't transfer them. You know what he calls this the Handgun Control Act of 1970. Here's a couple of these reasons he cites. This one is especially interesting. It's reason number four, that with few exceptions, handguns are not used for sporting or recreational purposes, and that such purposes do not require the use of handguns in private homes. Well, I'm sure that most of you who bought your handguns didn't buy them for protection in your home. You bought them for target shooting and things like this. Except maybe some of you here lately just bought handguns because of the increase in crime. You might have bought them for protection. One thing that's very interesting about this is the fact that he has got a provision in here whereby those of you who do not want to give up your handgun can check it in at a pistol club where they'll have a safe storage area. And when you want to shoot, you just go down there and you got to make sure that the man in charge will be there. Then he'll open up and let you have your handgun and you can shoot it right there on the premises and then it's locked back up. Now, they're going to charge $25 a year for a license to do this. This is very similar to the Soviet system. How many NRA members here tonight? Can anybody raise your hand? About 15. This is the latest American Rifle magazine. The editorial is H.R. 16250 in the Soviet system. I'd like to read to you the first paragraph. When this magazine published details of the Soviet system of controlling firearms under the thumb of the Soviet government in 1967, it hardly expected to see a similar plan proposed in the U.S. Congress as a means of clamping down on American handgun owners. Yet it has taken only 3 years to come to pass. Then there's another very interesting thing to compare here with this. The Soviet system, if you violate the communist law, the Kalashnikov law, is $100 for 1 year. Under Mitch's bill, it's $5,000 for 5 years. I wonder why he thinks American people or American gun owners need to have a much higher penalty hanging over their head. They can get in line. Where do you suppose these gentlemen got these ideas? The outlaw handgun. Eisenhower, Mitchell, you think it just all of a sudden come up because of this study they made? Personally, I believe that they had the conclusions in their mind before they went through this process of the study. And they got these ideas from such people as this individual who said this on June 17, 1968, on the floor of the Senate. I've been members of our association think this man should be defeated, that we cannot stand another 6 years with this man in office. The gun owners and sportsmen of the other states know this is true. And they are sending quite a little money into this state to help out the organization that formed up here with the Village Citizens Against Mansfield for his defeat. They recognize Mansfield as a more serious threat than God ever was because he has sent majority. And he can, like he did in regard to this ammunition, give you a little detail on this. There were 47 senators co-sponsored Senator Bennett from Utah, his bill to remove this ammunition provision. You're giving your name, Agent Adams. Today it came up for a hearing. Senator Mansfield was sick. Senator Kennedy was there in his place. And Kennedy came up with the lame excuse. Why, this is the caliber of ammunition that killed my brother Robert Kennedy. And I say, if that was a valid argument, why didn't they remove the caliber that killed his other brother and named Martin Luther King? The next day, Senator Mansfield came back and took his rightful place. And then he ordered the removal of the 22 ammunition. 47 senators capitulated to the power of Senator Mansfield and Senator Kennedy. That's practically half the Senate. If he wants to outlaw handguns, how easy is it going to be to outlaw? And then this list that is being prepared of all people who purchased handguns, handgun ammunition, excuse me, or whose handguns are used, how easy it would be to collect your handguns then. Some of you say you're going to hide it. I doubt very much if there's a record of it, if you'll even attempt it. It's better that we never. We repeal the Act 1958 and destroy the list. We do not need these lists around. And I might mention in regard to that Representative Mitchell's bill, where they're going to store all our handguns in these warehouses or shooting clubs. What an invitation to the criminal element, especially to the organized militant groups in the United States. How easy it would be to get them all at one time. I don't have to go home to home to get them. I wonder what these congressmen use for gray matter, really, when they start introducing such things. Well, in conclusion here, I'd like to say, or quote Harlan B. Carter again. By the way, it was sad the fact that his speech was not reproduced or published in the American Rifle magazine. It was the best speech I've heard in regard to preserving our right to bear arms, bar none. And he said, in 1969, in January, we are being led down a one-way street to the confiscation of our guns. Now, the question is before us, what are we going to do about it? The solution, he said, the solution is in grassroots policy by ordinary good citizens like us, the kind who never deal. We must organize and work especially hard in election years. We must turn out of public office all those who speak quietly, try and control their team, and gun confiscation their goals. Any further evidence, the NRA cannot do this dispensable job. I doubt your Wildlife Association can. You can, however. You have a vote. You count the vote. Unquote. We agree 100% with Harlan B. Carter, past president of NRA. This is the only answer. These letters are not doing the job. You're not getting the Gun Control Act repealed, and you're not very successful at stopping this new legislation. Like I mentioned earlier, there is more gun legislation, anti-gun legislation in Congress, in this session of Congress, than in any other session Congress had ever assembled. And this is how bad it is. So, in conclusion, I'd like to quote again from another gentleman that is quoted quite often, Edmund Burke. And he says, the only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. Thank you.
Very common. you have some staff, for instance, in New York State, where they have the Charles Law, and this has not personally attacked on this. Many things that you're trying to situate where a shopkeeper, for instance, does not have the right to protect his own shop. If somebody comes in and wants to rob him, they can do it. There's no way to protect himself. And yet, in the instances where shopkeepers have had a handgun, they have been very adequately and quite capable of protecting themselves, and the crime rate, very notably, has been way down. It's a matter of an armed citizen being able to protect themselves. Anything else? Sorry, I asked you, but it's a serious problem. But it is a serious problem.
There's a man that I know of, a good friend of mine, Frank Dyke.
Mm-hmm.
He works in the legislative area of Brother Quinn, I think he's got a lot.
Well, I don't know just how far we can go into politics here, because Mr. Hollowell is interested in trying to form an organization here. But for your own information here in Yellowstone County, as the man said, this gun thing, I'm sure most of us agree, it should be a state right. But you must also remember that you are going to elect state legislators and senators, and you might inquire as to how they feel about state government gun control laws and what they intend to do about it, if anything.
Quite well stated. I've often wondered, for instance, as far as the state legislatures are concerned, why their interests always seem to be more or less a state monopoly interest than the interests of the people. And it's one thing that is boiled right down to the factor of pure out and out money. Both United and Mark are the times I wonder if this is the absolute chunk of money that the state is not to be one that's absolutely allowed to keep the means of which you don't need to motivate. At least it seems to be a good motivation factor. Quite successfully, as I mentioned, I've seen a number of monopoly power interests that have already tried to run various what I would call executive actions that are different from that. They're just trying to merely manipulate control and alter control to themselves. You have to be very careful with this thing. The press, the radio, a lot of these elements do have various factions within them. And they actually are going to look to decide which they're best under. I'm not going to try to do this. It's only dollar like that. I grant that there should be a little bit more of the freedom element of people who live to stand up and speak out at their own time. You see various politicians at times making a big smoke screen, for instance, about Montana Power. In spite of all the smoke screen, Montana Power still exists. So it's a very true thing that's going on in political circuits. But the thing that I look for is why it has not actually been taken. For instance, all of a sudden we are now being obsessed in a gigantic turnabout by our entire congressional element of congressional representation, claiming now that they're all of a sudden going to represent us, the people. Well, why don't they? They're in there. They're still-making, for instance, right now on Vietnam. They're still-making on so many things that they're just setting tight. They're not taking any action. And actually, that is what they're in there for, is to take action. They have a number of legislators, for instance, that have better than two terms to take action. And possibly, the only reason that's the situation is there. I can't explain it. It explains itself. All they have to do is look at the records. They have their records to let down. Other people, for instance, will have to have the records to make.
Thank you, Mr. Lawler.
Thank you.
May I make just one comment? I have noticed that you probably have too, that so many people contend, well, I'm a Democrat, I'm a Republican. I can't vote one way, vote the other way. Well, I would like to suggest that if you want this republic to continue, but perhaps you should start voting for the man instead of the party. And now, Mr., I'll take questions.
7373 of June 17, 1968. We have reprinted.
You have them here?
Yes, on the back table. When you came in, where it said three literature, you could have picked up one. But if you want a handful of congressional records, you'll have to get them from the superintendent of documents. He'll send you June 17, 1968, if you want a big, big stack of them, but this is with the device, just this right here.
So all the money I write for something like that, they tell me, sorry, I'll print it.
Well, the congressional record is out there from 68. I'm sure you'll get it. You can get the original, or you can go right down to your library. They all have congressional records, and you read it for yourself. Anybody wants to write down the page, or you have the page with the date, pick up a copy of this when you leave.
Yeah, those libraries have an increased
right.
And if you don't take anything, you can go let someone in here see. Really, the United States is allowed to go and read the whole thing if you want. You can go right to, well, I can do that now, and I can put you in the back of the church.
No, I don't think Helena might have a copy of all congressional records. I would have
been in the state capitol. Somewhere in that state that you can go and read your congressional records.
Well, it would be on the state library in Helena. They have a state library up at the capitol. Every state has a state library where these things are filed. The congressional records are there. That's the biggest library in the state. And it will be in Helena. You can get it there. But you can get it at your own library, like the gentleman said, Joey. Maybe before we go any farther, I would like to give each and every one of you here an opportunity to help the association defray the cost of this building here tonight and the free literature, part of my traveling expense. So I'm going to ask that the two gentlemen in the back pass those buckets among you. So those of you that want to take the opportunity to help us out financially can do so. If you don't think the message is worth anything, don't put anything in. I'm not here to get money. I'm here to alert you. I feel you're an armed citizen, like the film brought out. You need to be alert. Most of all, you really need to be organized so you have somebody that's a spokesman for your group in this area. The young fellow in the audience, the gentleman in Oregon, asked a question when I was speaking there in March. He said, why does Representative Baldwin, he's the Eastern Oregon representative, vote for gun control laws like he did? Well, is he a communist or a subversive? I said, no, I don't think he is. I don't think he carries a card. But I'll tell you how simple it is. Did you notice here in Oregon last year, or earlier this year, excuse me, the delegate to the Oregon Democratic Convention voted in favor of retaining a plank that they had 2 years before to register all firearms in Oregon. Now here, the Democratic Party is well-financed, well-organized. Why would Representative Baldwin put his $42,000-a-year job on the line for listening to a few people who are discontent over the Gun Control Act and they write letters? When this well-organized, well-financed Democratic Party is all for gun control. He's a fool if he would. You don't have to be a subversive or a communist. He wants to stay in office. It's that, just that simple, ladies and gentlemen. And until you get organized to oppose this, they're going to go right along with the organized party in that state. Just like we have an organization we help form, I should say, in Pennsylvania. Citizens Against Republican Senator Scott. We are nonpartisan. But Scott is not for repealing the Gun Control Act, so he must be defeated. We must have a new man in there. In Oregon, Representative Baldwin, Representative Dellenbach. One's a Republican, one's a Democrat. They both must be defeated. In this state, you got two Democrats, or three, that's up for re-election. And they all must be defeated because they will not repeal this unconstitutional law. They took an oath of office to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States. And if they can't do that, then let's move my law. And you're not going to get it done unless you get organized to do it, because it's like like, now we have 160 members in the Kalispell arm of our association. Representative Mansfield realized that this is a hotbed of opposition to him. So he finagled to get himself as commencement speaker for the graduation there this weekend. Well, that 160 members of our association is putting a full page ad in, putting in his voting record and his statement and their statement. That cannot be financed by one individual or two individuals, not your billionaires, or own considerable property. But $2 or $3 from each one of you, like up there, can be done. And this is what organizations can do. You can register your opposition through the newspaper or other means. And by organizations, you can meet together every month like they do. They have 70 people or more every meeting. On the average, they have at least half their members there. And from our headquarters, we send out information every month to be related to the members. Now, the members also receive, as members, a newsletter every month. And each got one. As I handed them out, here's another one. These come every month to members. This is what we mean by organization. This is what we're going to do. And I'd like to ask a question here. How many are in favor of organizing an arm of our association in this area for doing the same thing that they organized in Great Falls Monday night for, Helena last night, Cutbank last week, Shelby last week, Folsom last week, and Libby last week? Are there any in this room in favor of organizational efforts? And I see you raise your hand. There's about 15. Well, good. Now, is there any other questions pertaining to organized efforts? Yes, you had your hand up and all that. Go ahead. Now the thing, in fact, is that right today the IRS has the authority to confiscate every firearm and all the ammunition you have in your home if you're caught with one illegal firearm. Say you have an old Hamilton 22 that has a barrel 1 inch short. They have the authority to confiscate all the ammunition and all firearms you own in your home. Now a sheriff or a chief of police cannot do this. All they can confiscate is the one illegal firearm. But under the bureaucracy, Mr. Lawler mentioned, they have the authority to do this. So as soon as they outlaw handguns, and those of you who think you can speak through, and yours wasn't registered, and you forgot you bought a box of ammunition for it, and you try to keep it, when they come, and many people say, well, they're not going to take mine without a few of them getting killed. So far, we have had, oh, I don't know how many cases of individuals being arrested by the ATF. And in all cases, they caught them completely unaware. An old man up here in Seattle, 83 years old, he was gun dealer in 1968. He didn't want nothing more to do with the Gun Control Act. So at a Washington Firearms Collectors meeting, he asked the IRS, he said, how many firearms can I sell this year without getting a federal license? And they told him three. They set him up right away. He has to own one of these short barrel 22s. They sent a couple of men in and they bought it. And they were right back the next day, four ATF agents. They confiscated all the firearms he owned, had in his basement business, and it was right in the center of Seattle in the color district. Got him completely unaware. Took him off to jail, 83 years old. Handcuffed him down, he set it out in the sewer there for a while, and they turned him loose. That was in April of 69. His trial came in April of this year. During World War I. This is the type of harassment going on. Over Illinois here, a young fellow by the, I can't remember his name, he was 28 years old. He went to Illinois gun club meeting. There were three ATF agents there, one posing as a photographer, one as a newspaper, and the other was just along for the ride, I guess. And somehow or another, either they had their firearms there, or it was mentioned that he owned a carbine, a 30 caliber with a flexor switch on it. The flexor switch means that it can be made fully automatic. Well, he was illegal by owning that firearm without having it registered. That was in December of last year. In January of this year, they came to his parents' home where he stayed. He wasn't married. They not only confiscated the illegal weapon, they took all the rest. He's out on a $10,000 bond. His parents have mortgaged their home to raise the money. Now, is this the type of justice? Is this the type of law that we want in the United States? Now, you don't hear about this because they like to keep it quiet. The papers very seldom even pick it up in that area right there. But it's going on all the time. And we ask, who's going to be next? Well, I can get carried away with these sort of things and talk all night, because I'm the principal editor of this, and I'm going to relate incidents that take place all over the United States. We have members in 46 states, and they're continually writing in letters or carrying out articles out of the newspapers telling us what the iniquitous act is doing to law-abiding citizens. If it hadn't passed, they would never run foul of the so-called law. We don't even like to refer to it as a law, it's an act put out by the bureaucracy. Congress isn't mean for some of that things to be in it. They have interpreted it this way. And just like your income tax starts with a harmless 1%, and they just add it to it and add it to it, and all types of regulations and restrictions, and they were going to do it with the Gun Control Act too. Just as time goes on, if you get a tip bill for being saddled with that, they're putting the spurs to you. Start jerking you with a bit in very short order. You'll stand still for that. Well, is there any more questions here? By those who are in favor of organizing, maybe you've got some questions in regard to that. Is there anyone here that would assume the chairmanship for those who want to organize in this area? In other words, the leadership, the one we can communicate with, the one that would be the spokesman for your area, where you've got legislators that want to get reelected this year, and there are those that have opponents, too. Some of them might not. But if you're organized, you can call a meeting, you can ask them to come and express their opinion in regard to gun control laws. I'd like to point out one gun control law you have in this state that is encouraging crime. Many of you don't even recognize it. Gun dealers here in the room recognize this manual or handbook that is given to all gun dealers by the Internal Revenue Service. It contains all the gun laws in the United States by city and by state. When you look at this in relation to the crime in the United States, it's very revealing. You look at Washington, D.C. or the District of Columbia. Right here in the back, you find that there are nearly six pages of gun control law. Over 100 inches, if you measure with a ruler, if you call, 100 inches of recorded gun control law. Then you look at New York, and there are 76 inches of recorded gun control law. I look at them because they have the highest crime rate, and President Nixon even said that Washington, D.C. is the crime capital of the world, not just the United States, of the world. You can't pick up a congressional record today, the recording of proceedings with Congress, without finding two full pages every day of the hideous crimes that go on there. Some congressmen have always been there. In relation to this concealed weapons laws. None whatsoever. So in regard to that, since Montana has a concealed weapons law, let's go and compare Vermont and Montana for 1966 with the FBI records. Using the number of hunting licenses as an index of how many firearm owners there are in the state. Montana, in 1966, had 22,127 firearm owners as per hunting license. Vermont has 33,232 firearm owners. Under the category of murder, Montana has 2.8 murders per 100,000 people. Vermont had only 1.5. Under aggravated assault, Montana had 42.6 per 100,000, where Vermont only had 7.4. Under robbery, Montana had 17.8 per 100,000, where Vermont only had 4. Now, looking that over myself, I come to the conclusion that this is the situation. So when law-abiding citizens are on equal footing with the criminal, in other words, they can carry their concealed weapons, or their weapons concealed just like the criminal does. The deal of the gun laws makes practice of breaking all types of laws. Honest law-abiding citizens are on equal footing with the criminal. The criminal don't like to get shot at, he don't like to get killed. So he just simply moves out of the states that don't have concealed weapons laws. He moves into states like New York, Illinois, California, and maybe Montana. Maybe some of these aren't homegrown crimes. They're out of state. Because they come here and you're at a disadvantage. You have an awful time getting a concealed weapon from them. It's practically impossible. So the criminal knows you're disarmed most all the time. It's just that simple. You don't like to get shot at, you don't like to get killed. So he's just going to move out of those states and go into where he can, and he knows the law-abiding citizen is going to get nearly dishonest. And if you want to lower your crime rate, then put these legislators on the spot and ask them to repeal this unconstitutional act. It's been on the books a long time, but there's no reason for it to stay there any longer. Then there's another piece of legislation that is going to be introduced in Montana. By the way, there is going to be legislation introduced to repeal the concealed weapons law. Man running for office in Glacier County. He's going to want to be state representative, Mr. Gallup. He was at the cut bank meeting, and I asked him if he would favor repealing the concealed weapons law. And he stood up and said, I not only would favor it, I'll introduce that legislation if I get elected. Well, our cut bank arm will invite the man who's already in office as the state representative. Get his position. And then they'll make it public to the newspaper. And they'll see if they don't get a chance. And this is what you can do to your organization. Then there's another bill, the self-defense bill, which was passed in Nebraska, whereby you can defend your property, yourself, and your loved ones without becoming legally in jeopardy. Going to follow the law. Nebraska is the only state that has it, but it will be introduced in this state this year through organizational effort by our arms already established. But I'm giving you an example of what can be done through organized effort. But individually, you never can accomplish it. You don't individually have enough money, I don't believe. And it takes a little money to get this done. Yes. Yeah, I see what the Christian Monitor is calling him.
Tim, your neighbor Steve.
Yeah.
They had an hour program on TV here about 10 days ago, and the heading of it was Tim, your neighbor Steve. Tim, your neighbor law, that's it.
Well, this law gives you the, without running afoul of law, the opportunity to come to your neighbor's rescue. In other words, those incidents like happened in New York where 40 or 50 people witnessed stabbing to death of this young lady. They were afraid to get involved because of the law.
volunteer to turn it on to you?
Yes, I did. Sure that the gun registration, handgun licensing, when they're Democrats, when you order votes, you just pick up the ballot you want to use. Nor do we can't do that. But here in this state, you can. And you can pick up that Democratic ballot and mark those who are running against Mansfield and Melvin. And you can do your country a great service and the people of this state a great service by so doing. And that might be all it needed to win the majority.
If I could make a statement, just to say that Governor John Kelsey definitely has made a case that he is against Justin Cole. Very definitely. He definitely has a positive change in this man. Justin seems to have plenty.
Well, until I see him come out and say that the Gun Control Act is a dismal failure and he's going to introduce legislation to repeal it, I won't believe what he says. Because every politician always says, I'm against gun control. They don't even understand what they're saying when they say this. Until he gets down specific and says, the Gun Control Act is a dismal failure, we must repeal it, then I just discount it as being political talk. Because I see all kinds of statements like this, time and time again.
What's the best way of dealing with politics right now in politics?
Getting in front of a group like this and asking questions really getting down. And invite the local news reporter to come. You can't do it individually. Well, it's getting late here, and I'd like to, yes.
I'd like to say one thing while we're all here. I think it's very important that our memory should be refreshed. There was only 17 men in the whole election. With 17 votes. Or even less, 3 or 5%, take 2 and 3 regarding that's your question today. How are you going to do it? Are you going to let it do it? It's your responsibility as a voter, as an American citizen. Tell them what you want.
Well, let's organize to be much more effective. And for those of you who are interested in organizing, I'd like to ask you to stay a few minutes later, and we can talk about this a little more. If you have any other questions, for those who are want to leave, are free to do so. Appreciate you coming out here tonight. I hope you felt it's been worthwhile and beneficial to you. And by the way, I might mention those of you who want to, may are not got time to organize or talk about it here tonight, want to be a member of our association, there's applications there in the back room, $5 a year. And you'll be joining with a national organization that has been more effective, I feel, than any other organization for bringing about repeal legislation and countering what's going on in a lot of states. So, with that, we'll just, those of you who want to discuss this a little more, maybe we'll just move over to this side of the room. Or if you all want to talk about organizing, we can do that for about 10 minutes more, just where you're at. Is there any questions you have on this? Now, you won't be the only arm in the state. You may be with a lot of other groups.
Congress.